First, I want to thank the organizers for putting up such a stimulating workshop. I really enjoyed it and learned a lot from it as well. So according to the previous talks, we have seen that there's so many penalized methods in the field. So there is a crucial quantity in all those methods is the tuning parameter lambda. So there is a great need to develop a data-driven method to select the practically optimal lambda. And we know that traditionally people would turn to cross-validation or AIC or BIC, such kind of information criteria. But there is an open question. Do all this kind of information criteria behave well in the high-dimensional setting? And there are a lot of open questions and unsolved questions. I'm trying to address a focus in this topic. So I'm talking about how we can modify the information criteria in high-dimensional setting. So that is the motivation of this talk. And this is the joint work with Peter Song at University of Michigan and Amy Wu at York University. Okay, sorry, thank you. Here is the outline of my talk. So I will break my talk into two parts. First, I'm going to introduce the information criteria and how we modify it and apply it to select the mean structure, like select the mean parameters. In the second talk, if time permitted, I'll show how the information criteria should be modified with application to select the graphic covariance structure or graphic models. The first part of the talk, the information criteria I'm going to using depends on pseudo-likelihood, which receives a lot of recent research attention. The composite likelihood was introduced by Lindsay and Cox-Reed. And this composite likelihood constitutes a very rich class of pseudo-likelihoods, marginal likelihood objects. Why does this composite likelihood methodology receive a lot of attention is that it really provides a lot of computational convenience when you have a very high-dimensional data and covariance structure is hard to handle, then you can offer like a compromise. So you do not attempt to come up with a full likelihood. Instead, you construct a composite likelihood. And composite likelihood essentially is a linear combination of traditionally defined full likelihood, but is constructed from subsets. Okay. So next, I'm going to introduce the formal definition of a composite likelihood. So let FY phi be a parametric statistical model with the parameter space phi. And then Y is the data set. And you have independent replications, I from 1 to n. Okay. Now, when we construct composite likelihood, we actually do not try to model all the parameters. So there is a parameter of interest, we call it zeta. And there is also some parameters, we put it in terms of nuisance parameter either. Okay. And then the model selection in this composite likelihood setting is really concerned with data because we in the composite likelihood formulation, the either doesn't come up. So the model selection is only concerned with the parameter of interest data. Okay. And then the corresponding parametric space. And then we're interested in a scenario that dimension p for this parameter of interest may increase with the sample size. Okay. And then next I'm going to talk about subsets that I just mentioned. So the subsets are the subset of the data we are going to construct a full likelihood. And in the end, we're just going to use the linear combination of those a full likelihood across the different subsets. So basically, you have a collection of subsets, and the subsets are indexed by the indices pair ij. I is the corresponding observation, and j is the corresponding coordinate for the y, which is the dimension of the response vector. Okay. So for example, for subset A, we use YA to denote all the data we observed on subset A. Then the composite likelihood is defined just as the product of the four likelihoods across different subsets, and then raised to certain power. And then there are some criteria to select those kind of optimal weights. And as we can see that the likelihood on subset A is just the marginal likelihood with respect to composite set A, and then WA, as I mentioned, is a set of suitable weights. So as you can see, we can construct univariate composite likelihood or bivariate composite likelihood. And then when we talk about parameter estimation, the maximum composite likelihood estimator is just solved by maximizing the composite likelihood. And it's well known in literature that the composite likelihood estimate is consistent, asymptotically normally distributed, but that's not asymptotic covariance matrix is based on Gaudin information matrix. So it's slightly different from the Fisher information matrix. Okay. Next, we'll go to the main topic. So how would we construct information criteria in this setting? So there are two major features in this setting. The first is P increases with sample size. And secondly, we are not really dealing with the norm or the traditional likelihood. Okay. But we find out later that we can actually construct analog of the traditionally used Bayes information criteria with very slight modification, and consistent criteria actually preserved. So that is the take-home message. So we can still construct BIC. Of course, we need certain modification, minor modification, but consistency results still preserved. Okay. So I'm going to introduce several necessary notation and skip most of the technical details. So let DS be the number of parameters under marginal submodel, and let script S denote model space containing all the possible submodels. And then we have a prior probability PS. We use that to denote a prior probability of the occurrence of the submodel defined on the model space S. And why do we need this prior probability? Because as you all know that Bayes information criteria was first proposed by Schwarz, and then what he proposed is that you give equal prior to all the competing models, and then you will just, based on the data, select model which gives you the highest Bayes probability. So that's how the prior probability came into play. So in the conventional setting, okay, when the P is fixed, we know it's very intuitive or understandable to just assign equal prior to all the competing models. But when P increases, then there's certain difficulty arises, okay, due to the seminal work and the groundbreaking contribution from Jia Hua and his colleague in his 2008 biometric paper. People now accepted a stratified sampling scheme, which I found is very equivalent to the PAC Bayes and prior that Pierre presented in yesterday's talk. Very similar prior scheme. Maybe it's slightly different, but the idea is very similar. Okay. So this stratified sampling scheme proposed by Jia Hua is as follows. I'm trying to convey that main spirit. So what we do is we just partition the model space into submodel spaces. Each submodel basically has the same number of parameters. Okay. Within that submodel space, for example, within the submodel with k parameters, each competing model gives the equal prior. But across different dimensional subspaces, the prior should be proportional, inverse proportional, but the inverse and the power you can fine tuning it, but it should be inverse proportional to the number of competing models in that, so that we can actually be fair to all the possible models. Okay. Using such prior probabilities, Chen proposed extended BIC criteria. So that is the first modified information criteria in the field to handle the high dimensional setting. And if you look into that modification, what really is new is we really need a harsher penalty term. Here is 2 gamma log and tau basically is the number of parameters in that model space K. So it's basically just in your mind, you know, because P increases, what you should do is to increase the penalty term, a harsher penalty. Okay. Now go back to the composite likelihood. We're trying to mimic what is being done in the full likelihood setting. So we're trying to do a composite BIC. So following what Schwartz proposed, we will select a model with the highest posterior probability, but now we don't have the usual posterior probability. We just come up with the composite posterior probability, but the idea still carries on. Okay. And using the Laplace approximation, we have the resulting criteria simplified as follows according to equation 2. As you can see, this is very similar to the EBIC that Jiahua used. Of course, it's different. The first term is the minus 2 log composite likelihood instead of full likelihood. And then the other terms basically look exactly the same. However, in the composite likelihood setting, there is a very tricky issue, is the measure of model complexity. In this field, people use the trace of the product of the Helson matrix and the variability matrix to denote the complexity of a model. Okay, and the Helson matrix basically is the expected negative Helson matrix, and the variability basically is the variance matrix of the composite score vectors. And this complex DS has been accepted as a measure of model complexity in this composite likelihood setting. So why do we need to use this model complexity DS star instead of DS? Because later, in order to prove the selection consistency of this, using the correct model complexity is crucial. Okay. So there are two modifications. The first is we have to use the model complexity measure, not the usual degree of freedom number of parameters, because here this may not be an integer. It's just a trace of the product of H inverse and V. Another modification is instead of using full likelihood, we are using the composite likelihood. So suppose we have different models. We use S equals T to denote the true model, and we use S minus to denote the underfitting model, and S plus denotes the overfitting model. And then, in order to establish the consistency of this composite BIC, we need to require some regularity conditions. I think the key regularity conditions is to measure the distance between two models in this composite setting. So we basically use the Kubelek-Leibler distance, but is the composite formulation. Okay. So suppose we have a submodel S, which is not the true model. How do we define the pseudo null value under this submodel S? So we define the pseudo null value zeta as 0. It's not the true null, it's a pseudo null under incorrect model. Also, how do we define this pseudo null value? It's basically the value of the data in this incorrect model, but somehow it minimizes the composite KL distance with respect to the true model. So we can define a pseudo null value for an incorrect model. And then, because there are so many models coming in, there is an issue of model identifiability. If with the increase of the number of parameters, the distance between the competing model and the true model getting smaller and smaller, then eventually we're not able to separate them. So in order to avoid that to happen, we really need to put a lower bound so that we have to separate the true model and any competing model. So basically, we're setting a lower bound for this composite KL distance between any competing model and the true model. Okay. So such model identifiability criteria using the composite KL distance is essentially the same condition used in Jiahua's paper when we talk about the distance between two models using projection matrix and looking at the differences. You know, geometric, we can have a geometric interpretation of that difference, delta S, looking at the difference between a true model and a competing model. Okay, so I'm not going to go into any technical details, so I'm just going to present the result. So under the regularity conditions that I mentioned, suppose that gamma, so is the size of the penalty on the extra term, is greater than omega, I'm going to mention what that omega is, minus 1 over 2k. K is the power term relating n to p, so basically you can determine this k. So suppose the size of the penalty term is greater than that, then we can show that with probability tending to 1, the composite BIC will be able to identify the true model. Okay. Of course, you're going to ask, how am I going to determine this gamma? Okay. I'm going to talk about that through the numerical examples. But first, I'm going to just show three different settings that we are going to use this composite BIC to select the mean parameters. So the first one is a simple setting. It's a multivariate normal model. Okay. So we have like the families. Each family we observe multivariate normal. And then the mean structure is determined by p number of covariates. And this p actually is very large. We're looking at p equals 1,000 and then 200 families. So if we look at the traditional setting, when p is not big, p equals 30 and n equals 200, if you compare the results, everything looks fine. Even the AIC looks perfectly fine. Okay. But when p increases, we see that the error rate, so the error rate, for example, for the composite AIC, the error rate is about 47%. So the first column is about 50%. Okay, so it's unacceptable to have such large proportion of errors for AIC. But if you look at BIC, it's better. Of course, EBIC is the best because here the true likelihood gives you the highest efficiency. So we compare our composite likelihood with EBIC because this offers a golden standard for us to compare to see how much efficiency loss that occurred here if we use composite likelihood instead of full likelihood. But as you can see, the efficiency loss is quite minor. Okay. And then for this setting, we really need the gamma equals 0.5, the size gamma equals 0.5, then the false positive rate and then false discovery rate are both acceptable. Okay. So this is a very simple model. We really don't need composite likelihood at all, but we compare it with true likelihood to see the efficiency loss that is quite minor. And then we move to multivariate probing model, exactly the same setting, but we dichotomize the continuous response into binary variables. And then you will see that, so I skip the traditional setting and just look into the high dimensional setting when p equals 100 and then we only have 100, n equals 100. And then we'll see that we really need gamma, which is the size for the penalty term, at least to be 0.5 to have acceptable false discovery rate. And then if you compare univariate composite likelihood and bivariate composite likelihood, this one always gives better efficiency, better power. Then this is understandable because you have more information in bivariate likelihood compared with just univariate marginal likelihood. And for this case, I didn't compute the EBIC because it's very hard to compute. It involves high dimensional integration. It's computationally very intensive. And then the next application is less obvious because the two examples I just presented seems very straightforward. The next one is the conditional likelihood. So this is a very well-known model is the quadratic exponential family for binary clustered binary data. We have mean parameters mu, and we also have interaction terms between within the clustered binary binary response. So this is the quadratic exponential family discussed in John Prentice's paper. And in literature, people have proposed to use, because just formulating the full likelihood is computationally very intensive because it involves a normalizing constant which is hard to compute. Okay. And then this also depends on the different cluster size. When cluster size is different, you will have to recalculate it. So it's not very easy to work with. On the other hand, if we use composite likelihood, things become very, very straightforward. So instead of forming full likelihood, we just write the sum of log conditional likelihood of each variable conditional or the other binary variables in that family. Okay. And then if we use this conditional likelihood, and then we can just use existing logistic regression software to do the parameter estimation. Okay. So now I'm going to examine the information criteria in this case. Of course, for the conditional likelihood, we expect it to not perform very similarly to bivariate or univariate marginal likelihood. It could behave a little bit different, and that is exactly what we are seeing here. So we have the same mean parameters mu, and then we have p is the number of covariates, and p is 1,000 as well. And once again, the AIC doesn't work very well because the false discovery rate is about 70%. And the CLBIC for the N equals 500 is about 20%. But when the intercorrelation within the family increases, the false discovery also increases. But if we increase the N equal to 1,000, then the false discovery becomes acceptable. So it's comparable. P equals 1,000, and the number of families equals 1,000, and then this composite BIC works well. Okay. And we also did a real data analysis. This is the data from Michigan. We have a very limited number of patients, 35 patients, and then we have their renal functions measured as either failure or not failure, so binary outcome, and then they have under each patient's tissue, renal tissue, has undergone microanalysis to obtain gene expression data. Okay. So the purpose, they have a 500 candidate genes, and then we want to know, just want to select the important genetic markers which have important influence on risk of the renal functions. And the challenge of this data set is the presence of correlation among repeated measurements with each patient. And then also the number of repeated measurements varies across the 35 patients. So what we use is we just use the quadratic exponential family. We allow the intercorrelation between the binary response. And then family size doesn't really matter here. We just use the traditional logistic regression on this composite likelihood. So we have total number of measurements is 400 and number of covariates is 500. So what we do, what we see here is we compared both AIC version of composite likelihood information criteria and the composite BIC. And then for this specific setting, because the sample size is very small, we just use the lower bound of the gamma, which is easily computed, 0.75. And then when the tuning parameter increases, we just get a nested sequence of models. And we are not very surprised to see that actually AIC, the value just increases, it just decreases monotonely. So basically, the AIC actually just favors very complicated model, more the better. So it's overfitting very badly. But CLBIC actually just favors a model with four parameters. Okay. So basically, the composite BIC shows its advantage of balancing the model fitting and the model complexity when dealing with a large model space. And some practical concerns, as I mentioned, how to determine the size of the penalty gamma. Okay, so in the data analysis, when the sample size is small, okay, as a conservative approach, we use the lower bound of the gamma, which is easy to compute. But when sample size is fairly big, for example, if you have n equals 500 patients, then you don't need to use this conservative size gamma. You can basically, you have all the competing models. With even competing models, you can get a very good estimate of that gamma. And that gamma depends on a quantity omega. That omega is the ratio of the maximum eigenvalue over the mean eigenvalues of this of this matrix. So it's computable. And if under the traditional likelihood setting, this is a projection matrix, and that ratio is just equal to 1. Now, if you have univariate composite likelihood, we have computed through our numerical experiences, is greater than 1, but not very deviates from 1 much. But as the composite likelihood more different from the true likelihood, then this ratio could be much bigger. So it just shows this ratio of the maximum eigenvalue over the mean eigenvalue just shows how different your composite likelihood is from the traditional full likelihood. In the special setting, when you have full likelihood, that ratio is just 1. You can, if your data sample size is big, you can just compute it. So that's the practical guidelines. Okay. And then I will just have 2 or 3 minutes. I want to briefly mention, so far I've just mentioned how we modify our information criteria when we want to select the mean structure. But in many cases, we're also interested in selecting covariance structure. So that is called the covariance selection in Gaussian graphic models. Okay. So how do we, many speakers have mentioned that if you have a Gaussian variable, multivariate normal, and that if you look at inverse matrix of the covariance matrix, that basically tells you the connectivity of all those variables. So that connectivity is described by a graph with the vertices, basically is all the covariates, and E is the set of the edges. So if looking at the inverse covariance matrix, if one of the entries non-zero, off-diagonal entries non-zero, then the two nodes are related. So there are many papers available about how we do penalize likelihood estimation of covariance matrix, so I'm not going into that detail. But I'm just, because nobody has really looked into the issue whether BIC or cross-validation is valid, a data-driven method to do the tuning parameter selection. So through our numerical computation, we see that if the graph is relatively dense, then both BIC and cross-validation will break down. None of them will perform well. But suppose the graph is sparse, then we really have to modify the BIC. So we really have to modify BIC with the extra term. Here is 4 times the log of the P. P is the size of the is the covariance matrix. The number of edges there is the number of the variables in that covariance matrix. So we really have to do a modification. So that is the message I want to briefly mention. And then here, instead of using a likelihood estimator plugin there, you're just using your penalized likelihood estimator for your covariance matrix, and then you can use whatever penalizing method you want to use. You can use weighted adaptive lasso, or you can use in lasso. You can also use GAD. Okay, it doesn't matter. But here, you really have to control this size of the penalty. And if that is the true, then we're able to show that under, I'm going to mention this restriction, under the restriction that the true graphic model is a bounded subset, and then under the regularity conditions, then using the modified BIC, we're able to consistently identify the true covariance structure. But we are not able to theoretically prove the same result for the cross-validation. So let's compare them through the next table. The last slide. If you look at this graphical model, I'm just comparing the cross-validation and modified BIC. SCAD performs slightly better than ASU consistently. And then if you look at the so P equals 250, and then here the total number of parameters is like it's about 20,000. Okay, so that's the number of parameters in this setting. If you look at the cross-validation, you'll see that false positive rate is really, really high. You falsely identify about 2,000 edges if you use cross-validation as your data-driven method to select lambda. But BIC, modified BIC, performs much better. Okay, so that means you really have to modify your information criteria before you select your optimal lambda. So I summarize it. So the take-home message is the information criteria can be constructed using composite likelihood or any other pseudo likelihood you like when the full likelihood is hard to compute. But you have to really modify your penalty. So the extra penalty is needed on the dimensionality of the model space when P increases. And then the application could be used to select mean structure or a covariance structure. And then the likelihood term can be evaluated as the penalized likelihood director directly, so that you can use this modified BIC to select the tuning parameters for penalized likelihood estimation. Thank you. Sorry for the overtime.